Blog Talk Radio.
About the generations, and to say we want to make it a better place for our children and our children's children, so that they know it's a better world for them, and think they can make it a better place.
There's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. Brighter than tomorrow. And if you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry. In this place, you feel there's no hurt or sorrow. There are ways to get there. If you care enough for the living, make a little space. Make a better place. Heal the world.
Better place for you and for me and the entire human race. There are people dying. If you care enough for the living, make a better place for you and for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Suicide is Not the Answer. I am your moderator, Beverly Black. This show is sponsored by the USA International Men's January 2018 is Men and Boys Emotional Freedom Month. And we thank you for tuning in. I am going to go over why suicide is not the answer to your problems. This inaugural show is dedicated to my brother, Homer Joe Black Jr. He took his life January 22nd, 1977. I was 17 years old. I want to send out love and hugs to everyone that is either a survivor or the sibling of a survivor, as I am, and to anyone that is affected. I also want to shout out to my sister, Maria. I want to thank you for your love and your continued support and encouragement. And I also want to thank my family. Lord knows the world has been tumultuous. We all have endured problems. But I want to thank my family for being there while I experienced that path along my own road. Though I didn't consider suicide, I am the sibling suicide survivor. My guest, Stephen Hutchinson, is a survivor. We're going to get his story, and we're going to welcome him in on the line in just a second. What I would like to now do is share with you a Huffington Post article that published in 2014, and it's very short, but it is 6 very relevant points as to why suicide is not the answer to your problem. So point number 1, things change over time. Regardless of your situation, things do not stay the same. You may feel very bad today, but it won't last forever. Remember this fact. Regardless of your current situation, everything changes over time. This includes your current situation. Nothing remains the same forever. Point 2. There are always other options. Always. You may feel lost and confused, but the answers to your specific problems are out there. The key is that you have to find the answers. The answers to your problems will not come to you. As mentioned before, the first step is finding the solution to your problem, is to seek help from a qualified professional. And that was the aforementioned point that I didn't read. But always it is advised that the first thing that you need to do is seek the services of a professional counselor. This is advised. And I also advise that anyone experiencing any issues, any struggles, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That number is 1-800-273-8255. So back to point number 2. Although the best solution is to seek out help from a qualified professional, it does say that the key is that you have to find the answers. So point number 3, you can't predict the future. You are fearful, confused, and do not know where to turn. You think that there is no hope for you. When you are in this situation, remember the 99% rule. The 99% rule states that no one can predict the future with 100% certainty. Even if the thing that you are afraid of does happen, there are circumstances and factors that you can't predict which can be used to your advantage. For instance, you missed the deadline for a project you have been working on for the last few months. Everything you feared is coming true. Suddenly your boss comes to your office and tells you that the deadline is extended and that he forgot to tell you the day before. This unknown factor changes everything. You may be 99% correct in predicting the future, but all it takes is for that 1% to make a world of difference. Point number four, focus on the facts of your situation and not your thoughts. When people are depressed, they rely on their fearful, depressing, and negative thoughts. That is a huge mistake. Your fearful thoughts are exaggerated and are not based on reality. When you are depressed, focus on the facts of your current situation, and not on what you think. Do not assume anything regarding your current situation. Seek help from a professional immediately. Point number five, go to the hospital immediately when it's that bad. If things are so bad that you are unable to function, drop everything and go to your local hospital or crisis center immediately. The people there will take care of your situation right away. Point number six, no situation is hopeless. Your loved ones, friends, relatives, God, mental health counselors, priests, ministers, etc. are all good sources of help. They are all willing to help you, and they can make a difference, but you must be willing to take advantage of this help. Regardless of your situation, take advantage of the help that is around you. Remember, every problem has a solution. You just have to find it. And that is from an article on Huffington Post. You can email them at strongertogether@huffingtonpost.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Mr. Stephen Hutchinson. How are you, Stephen?
I am excellent. I am excellent, Queen Beverly Black Johnson. I am excellent. And thank you very much for inviting me to participate in this. And thank you to the entire Tribe family.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know that you have a lot on your plate. So we're going to dive right in. We know that you are a survivor. Tell me about the time when you were in your darkest hour that would make you consider suicide.
Okay. And yes, I would like to first clarify that point that I did not attempt to commit suicide, but I was seriously considering that as an option.
Okay.
And the result of that was that I was suffering from some very severe type of depression where I couldn't really, in those moments, I could not really detect any pleasure or any happiness or any joy or of any possibility that I would ever experience it again. At that time, I was 21 years old, I remember specifically. I grew up in New York City, and I met a friend of mine. Actually, he was a teacher of mine in a business school. I was going to a business school, and he was a teacher. And he was about 15 years older than me, and we became very good friends. He was a very, very intelligent person. Had great communication skills, and he was a mentor to me. So he wasn't from New York, but he was teaching in New York, and that's how we met, and we communicated and became very good friends. And he left New York and went to Houston, and I was in New York. So we were still communicating. He said, "Hey, what do you think about coming down to Houston? Get out of New York City." I was 21, and it would have been the first time that I voluntarily left New York City on my own. So So I said, yes, I'm going to do it. And I did. I went down to Houston. And it was in Houston where I actually experienced this intense depression. I was working at a Taco Bell restaurant. Now, in retrospect, that could have a lot to do with my depression, actually. But anyway, aside from that, I specifically remember at that time I was working at a Taco Bell restaurant and just trying to figure out how I was going to get my life together. I was 21 years old, which I believe, at least for me and my personal experience, that is a tumultuous time in the life of most people because we're transitioning from being an adolescent to being an adult. And that transition period can be quite tumultuous.
Absolutely.
Yes. And also with the gender identification too, becoming a man from being a boy, like how do you transition into being a man? You know, so the whole emotional, in retrospect, it was a very great emotional period for me. And I was grappling with emotions and feelings and aspirations and desires and reality.
Mm-hmm.
And they made for quite a recipe for a challenge. It was a great challenge for me at that time. And I really didn't have a definite goal in my life, being at the age of 21, but not having made a decision. There are things that I wanted to do, but I really wasn't committed to any particular strategy or goal or plan for life. And I remember, you know, very clearly, I remember one day in particular, you know, being there, being at work, and just feeling so sad. It was a sadness that I was feeling, a very deep sadness that I couldn't even hide anymore. I couldn't mask it. Like usually, you know, I may be sad or whatever, but I could always cover it good enough so that, you know, if you and I were together, you wouldn't really know. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't really be able to detect it, you know, that I was sad or depressed or whatever. I could easily, like, hide it, you know. In many ways, just, you know, using diversionary tactics that maybe we have all developed in our lives so that, you know, we can deceive others, you know. So,
right.
But this,
the ability of masking our emotions, we've all done that.
Exactly.
We do that on a job interview. What? $5 an hour, you know. So
that's right. Exactly.
Like you said, Taco Bell. So, yes, of course. All right.
You know. So now, but this time, my feelings of sadness were so overwhelming that I couldn't hide it. I couldn't, and I'm working in a restaurant, okay? And
right.
I'm feeling these overwhelming feelings, so I have to leave. I leave and go into the bathroom because I have to literally get away from everybody else. They are going to see me have a breakdown. Just like break down, you know what I'm saying? In tears. That was the stage I was at. I was just so frustrated and so emotionally destitute and emotionally exhausted and confused that, you know, I was literally, I wanted to cry. Literally, like tears from the eyes, not just feeling sad. Now, I felt sad before, but rarely had I ever reached a stage where, you know, I'm actually going to start crying, you know what I'm saying? And that was it, you know. And I left, you know, I went into the bathroom, and I just broke down and just started crying and just started thinking, you know what? You know, it's not worth it anymore. It's too hard. Life is too hard. This is too difficult. I can't figure it out. I don't have help. I mean, it just, like, you know, went on and on and on where I was thinking, that I did not want to live anymore. Mind you.
Now,
yes. Yes, ma'am.
Well, let me interrupt and ask you this, because I'm wanting to know, you've listed some of the reasons, and I'm wanting to know, what part did fear play? If fear played any part, what part did fear play? And after the tears, was that more therapeutic? Did it release the overwhelming anxiety of the emotions that had welled up? So what part did fear play, if any? And when you did cry, was it a release from the anxiety that had built up?
Okay. So if I ask the first part first about the fear, what part did fear play? Fear, I contend, played a great deal. It was very influential. And the fear, I believe, was my fear of the future, because I did not have a plan, sure, what was coming up. And as I mentioned, at that age of 21, being like in the middle or being in a transitional period, going from adolescence to manhood, you know, it's like climbing, you know, from one tree branch to another. You know, if you're going to climb from one tree branch to another, before you let go of the previous tree branch, you better make sure you got a good grip on the other one, right?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Or else, you know, that could be a problem, depending on how high you are in the tree. But that, so in that way, going from that one transition to the other, I was so unsure about what was coming next that I was overwhelmed with fear. It was very fearful. I didn't know, like, what was going to come next. I had some ideas of what I wanted, but I had not made any convictions. I had not made any solid decisions as to what my future was going to be. And as a result of that, a lot of fear, overwhelming fear, and inadequacies and feelings of insecurity, a lot of insecurity. I felt very, very insecure. You know, and it came out in my behavior, you know, which, and I could tell from the reaction I received from others and friends, you know, that there were, you know, I did have some issues, even though I didn't want to address them directly, but I definitely had some issues at that stage, and that's how fear played in. Now, your other part of the question about my crying and the tears and what was the result of that. Well, actually, I think in reality, I don't remember the exact amount of time, but I think it was maybe about a week of therapeutic crying that I went through. Because I remember specifically playing particular music that would make me cry. And specifically, one of the artists that I would listen to was J.A. Rogers, who's a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And J.A. Rogers, I mean, this brother could just, I mean, he's like a baritone, heavy baritone brother that made all these incredible songs. One of his songs, I don't know, maybe you've heard it before, Beulah Jean. You remember the song Beulah Jean?
I can't say that I do.
Okay, there's another one he made called... he said a song called Say You Love Me. That was one of his big hits, Say You Love Me.
Okay.
Say you love me. Say I'm the one your eyes see. Say you need me. Deep down inside, like I need you. I need you to see me through. Look, that was one of his songs.
I haven't heard it. Thank you, because, you know, dealing with the musicians that I deal with, I'll definitely reach out and check into that. But now, so let me ask you this. You would play music so that it would take your emotions to the height of producing this effect in you so that you could have that relief and that therapeutic cry. So you are actually evoking therapy for yourself so that you could, I guess I would say, one could say unconsciously, it's therapy that you're evoking upon yourself. Now, take us to the point where you came to the light of a new day where you knew that it was not an option. Suicide is not the answer. As you look back in hindsight and as you have charted plans in your life and you can branch and chart a and craft out a plan for your future, how does it feel now and where was that light turning point for you?
Okay, yes. Going from that stage, and I did do the intentional therapy, I also was reading. I remember, I think I was reading a book called The Art of Love. I think that's the name of the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Art of Love. And I was reading another book as well from the Vedic literatures. It was more of a spiritual enlightenment type text from the Vedas, from the Hindu philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that book as well. And I was doing my therapy with the music as well. And what I was doing at that stage was figuring out what was the next stage of my life and what that was going to be. So those things helped me. I was able to realize that I needed help, even though I think I was still very immature in accepting the help. I could have probably done a lot better if I was more mature. But at that stage, you know, I did the best that I could. So with the reading and with my friend as well, you know, my mentor, and speaking with him and associating with other people, I just started, you know, getting it together and understanding that I had to make the decision as to what the future was going to be like. No one was going to come and do that for me. And I shouldn't expect anyone to. But I think in my immaturity, I was expecting that. You know, I wanted somebody to come rescue me. Like, you know, hey, come save me. You know, I'm having serious problems. I need help. Somebody come, you know, the Lone Ranger, you know, somebody come through. Come some hero, Superman, Batman, Robin, mommy, daddy, sister, brother, somebody. And I think that's why it was so frustrating for me and so depressing for me when I realized, you know, that no one was coming. I got to do this myself. I have to take on. And I think I learned a lot through that experience. So in particular, speaking about that and speaking about suicide in particular, and my rejuvenation from that and the stage at which I began to see some light at the end of the tunnel was ideally when I began to understand that I had to intentionally chart out the next stage of my life. Now, maybe that was the first time in my life that I ever actually intentionally did it. I may have done it before then as well. But doing something unconsciously and doing something consciously are two totally different things, even though it's the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is my realization, that if I do something unconsciously and I do the exact same activity consciously, the results will be radically different, revolutionarily different.
Wow.
I began to see, you know, there was some light,
mm-hmm.
and I started running for the light. And I got out of that darkness.
Go ahead. You got out of that.
Yeah, got out of that darkness.
Right.
But I had to experience it. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. But you had to experience it.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that I had to experience. I believe sincerely that I had to experience that darkness because I needed to know that it exists too. That also exists. That is also within me. That is also a possibility. That is also a realm. That is also a place. That is also probably today we would call it a thing, right? People say that now. Oh, that's really a thing. Yes, that's a thing. That is a thing.
Right.
Depression is a thing. Suicide is a thing. You know, it exists. And we can go there. I can go there. So I figure if I can go there, others probably could also go there. And I could also get away from there. You know, so
absolutely,
I think that
absolutely.
Helped me. Yeah, that
now,
helped me understand my power.
I'm glad you said that. It helped you understand your power, because as you take me on this journey, what I am hearing more prevalent each time you take another step and another step and another step and another step is that you're finding that the answer lies within yourself. You were looking externally for someone to come and save you, Batman, Superman, Robin, mommy, daddy, uncle, cousin, sister, brother, friend, lover. But you started playing the music, doing the work, and healing from the inside, and the light started shining from within, because the answers that you ultimately arrived at all derived from within you. So that is truly indicative of the fact that the answers to our lives lie within ourselves. That means that we were born with everything we needed to fulfill our purpose inside of us, just like fruit from a tree. The seed with which that fruit is to multiply is already within it.
Within. That's right.
And within.
Absolutely.
That is true. Now, I certainly want to thank you so much for being here. This is our inaugural show, and we will be back February 19th, 2018. I want to ask you for a parting message, if you will, for our listeners. And then we are going to be mindful of your time, because we only asked for a certain amount for you to calendar, and we appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Thank you
my
so
pleasure.
Much, Beverly. I appreciate it so much. And my parting words would be, you know, summarizing what you just mentioned as well, you know, is that it's within. The answers are within. There's a terminology called autodidact. An autodidact is the compound word auto, which means self, and didact, which means teacher, taught, something which we are not taught, no pun intended, but that we are self-teachers and we can teach ourselves. So rarely does a person teach another person that they could teach themselves. And I think that's the greatest lesson, to be able to teach yourself and to teach another to teach themselves. That is the highest teaching. And finally, that this talking about suicide, there can be suicide on any level and on many levels. So even though, you know, I confronted my physical suicidal consciousness, I still had to face my economic suicidal consciousness, my emotional suicidal consciousness, my aspiration suicidal consciousness, my integrity. We still have to face all those. So suicide can exist on different levels. So, you know, ultimately, wherever we're faced with it, we have to confront it and overcome it. That's my final words.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I second that emotion. And again, I want to thank you again for being our guest on this inaugural show, and I want to thank USC A International Men's Day for being our sponsor. January 28th is Men and Boys Emotional Freedom Day. You can get more information via In Search of Fatherhood. Just look them up online or on Twitter. Google In Search of Fatherhood, and that will link you with USA International Men's Day. I want to thank you again for spending this time with me, Steve. I want to thank my ancestors in heaven for the life that I live and lead. And as a messenger, this is my ministry. I was 17 again when my brother committed suicide, and I thought that there was something wrong with me, that there was something wrong with me. I internalized it. And after 41 years, this is the first time, besides my memoir that I published last year, that I have made mention in greater depth of my brother's suicide. So I'm going to carry the torch from here in honor of my brother. He preferred to be called Joe, so his girlfriend used to call him Joey. And so, Joe Black, this is for you. God bless you, and I want to thank you for being my brother, being my sister's brother, being my children's uncle, and being a veteran of the United States Navy. And Stephen, thank you for spending this time with me. You have been a true brother. I want to thank you for being also a brother station here on Tribe Family Channel and for being the wind beneath my wings today. And God bless you. And I just want to leave you with these words by Michael Jackson. You are not alone. God bless.
Another day has gone.